This is Colorado Matters from Colorado Public Radio. I'm Ryan Warner. Governor John Hickenlooper was opposed to legalizing recreational marijuana, but he's now at the heart of figuring out how to make it happen. That is, enacting Amendment 64 and figuring out the rules for retail marijuana. Of course, a big question mark still looms over the state, and that is, will the federal government seek to block Colorado from proceeding? We'll talk about this and continued tensions over fracking with Mr. Hickenlooper right now. We met him, as we do regularly, at the state capitol. Governor, thanks for being with us again.
Delighted to be back.
And we'll talk about regulating recreational pot in a moment, but I've heard very little about the opportunities here to fill the state's coffers. Pot will be taxed. The first $40 million each year goes to school construction and facilities. After that, it's up to the state to decide how to spend it. Acknowledging that there are a lot of steps between here and actually bringing in that revenue, are you salivating just a little bit at the prospect?
It's a gold mine. No, it actually is anything but a gold mine. There is no tax passed yet. If you look at the way the language of the initiative was set up, it advises, it compels the legislature to propose another initiative for the next election that will actually set in place, you know, the taxing activity. Again, this is all hypothetical, dependent upon what the federal government does.
Well, on the subject, I want to play a clip from a listener who contacted us with a question for you.
Okay.
This is Jessica LaRue of Denver.
Governor Hickenlooper, you had a phone meeting earlier this month with the Department of Justice's Eric Holder in regards to Amendment 64. Will the state government officially ask for federal changes to marijuana policy to support the will of the voters?
Just a little bit of background here. Marijuana is illegal under the Controlled Substances Act. Will your administration ask Eric Holder or ask members of the congressional delegation, some of whom are already moving on this front, to somehow amend that law to allow states that choose to legalize marijuana to do so?
So Congresswoman DeGette has already moved forward and is proposing legislation that would allow states to opt out. That gets Holder out of his bind. The problem with Eric Holder, with the Attorney General, is that his job is to enforce the laws of the United States. So when we talked to him, we said, this is what our voters have said. We are bound to try and implement the will of the voters. So if there's any way within the legal system that this can happen, we want to encourage it. So we have, to your listener, we have made that request in so many words.
You haven't gotten an answer yet.
We have not gotten an answer, but there's a huge gray area in how the Justice Department enforces the law of the land. Certainly with medical marijuana, they have, as long as the scale and the impact was not perceived as overly large, they seem to have looked the other way. That doesn't appear as easy to do when you get to the scale of marijuana. Cultivation, commerce, the consumption at the scale that our voters have supported, that's going to make it very hard for the U.S. Justice Department to look the other way.
You mentioned the congressional action from Congresswoman Diana DeGette. It also has support from Republican Mike Kaufman and Democrats Ed Perlmutter and Jared Polis. Do you like the idea of pursuing a change to the Controlled Substances Act? Do you like that congressional push?
The like is that magical word. So do I like it? No, I don't like it. I don't think this is a great thing for our kids, but I do have total respect for the will of the voters.
And so is that congressional move, does it have your backing?
Yeah, absolutely.
On Tuesday, your office formally announced that it's taking part in a task force to draw up regulations for recreational marijuana stores. From where you're sitting right now, do you imagine that those rules will end up looking generally like the ones currently in place for medical marijuana storefronts? Or do you think the state will head in a different direction?
It's a little too early to tell. My guess is they'll be relatively similar. I'm sure there'll be some differences. We already heard some differences being discussed, but I want to let that process work its way independently.
What safeguards would you like to see in place? For instance, medical marijuana shops have to have this kind of constant video feed. There's a lot of monitoring in place of their activities. Is that the kind of thing you'd like to see in these retail pot shops?
Well, I think that the issues around not just the video surveillance, but also location, the geography, is it going to be close to schools? I continue to be very concerned about the effect of high THC marijuana on developing minds, right? Kids who are 14, 15, 16, who there are a number of people that feel that this is going to open the floodgates, that these kids are going to think, well, if mom and dad voted for it and it's legal, it isn't going to hurt us. And there are some studies that suggest that's not the case.
You're listening to Colorado Matters. I'm Ryan Warner, and we're at the Capitol for our regular discussion with Governor John Hickenlooper. Governor, tensions continue to simmer between the state and local communities over oil and gas development. Earlier this month, Longmont voters passed a ban on fracking in city limits. Separately, you're suing Longmont over the rules that it developed prior. You met with Boulder County commissioners to air concerns over regulations they're drafting. Here's how Kim Sanchez from that county's planning department describes Boulder's focus.
We're trying to enact the most protective land use regulations that govern new oil and gas operations while at the same time recognizing the existence and extent of state authority over those operations. Our intent is to try to harmonize the application of our local regulations with the state.
You can almost hear her trying to avoid being sued by the state.
As I've said repeatedly, there's nothing we want to avoid more than a lawsuit, right? For us to sue Longmont was a very, very difficult decision. And the last thing any governor wants to be is crosswise with communities in the state. So we continue to reach out to Boulder, and I'm going to go up and have a town hall meeting there.
But fundamentally here, it seems like a growing number of local governments don't feel that existing state protections are adequate.
Well, the real problem here is that we have this split estate, right? The people that own the surface land and build their house or their business there, they don't own the minerals underneath in the vast majority of private land in Colorado. That's a very difficult situation. So what's happening is communities, because of horizontal drilling and new unorthodox exploration methods, people are seeing the possibility of oil exploration coming into their counties that had never had it before. And now, because the people that have the surface ownership don't have any mineral ownership, they see nothing but loss. But the fact remains that in our system, somebody owns those mineral rights under the ground, and they've got every right to the traditional protections by law.
I mean, the very nature of the name split estate speaks so well to the split political views on this.
Well,
is there middle ground? I mean, is there room for negotiation here?
I think that it's all about rolling up our sleeves and listening and representing both sides. But this is something that, A, the potential good. I mean, people care about climate change and recognize that this is a legitimate, look at the Hurricane Sandy, look at the drought we've had, the extremes we're seeing in our weather, we should be looking at it. And horizontal drilling and inexpensive natural gas are a transitional way. Obviously, we're going to have to rely eventually on renewable resources, wind and solar and other energy sources. But in the meantime, we've got to recognize that we need this transition fuel, and how can we do it and make sure that we keep our communities safe?
I'm glad you brought up renewable energy because it fits in with something we heard from listener Larry Milosevic, who lives in Lafayette. He feels that your administration hasn't made renewables the same priority that your predecessor, Governor Bill Ritter, did. And he asks, why not?
Well, we are implementing what Bill Ritter created. And I think we have to give Bill Ritter a tremendous amount of credit. Really, under his watch, that so much of Colorado's leadership in renewable energy was established.
Did you talk to him? Is he happy with where you're headed on this?
Yeah, I think so. I think that the challenge here is cost has to be, we have to recognize it as we're making a certain investment in renewables, and that we all have to sign off on on the scale of that investment. So we passed a renewable energy
A standard, a minimum.
Yeah, a REC standard so that we have, 30% renewable energy. We're going to get there ahead of schedule on that. And those costs that we spend, because they're not huge, but there are more to have renewable energy. Do we want more of that? Do our citizens want more of that? Well, that's the next step.
Earlier this month, we finally got to see the conclusions of TBD. This is a task force you convened to get broad community input as to what people want from state government. And one area they touched on was constitutional reform, the idea of somehow solving the so-called Gordian knot of financial restrictions in the state constitution. Are you going to act on that? And let me just say, I have to tell you that I have heard this call for change over and over again. And I sat here with your predecessor and talked to him over and over again.
It's a clarion call. Isn't that what they say?
Is it a
clarion call for change?
And are you going to heed the call? And do you think we might see something out of this legislative session that would refer a ballot measure?
Well, after you lay it out like that, that makes it so tantalizing and attractive that no one else has been able to do it. It's been so, you know, impossible. It's been this insurmountable hill.
I'm playing to your ego.
Exactly. Now I'm sliding closer to the microphone. The reason that no one's acted on it is because it is so challenging. But the wonderful thing about TBD was we did begin to hear on a statewide basis a whole number of different suggestions and possibilities of what might a better change look like. And I don't think it's, you know, I'm not committing myself to anything, but I could imagine a ballot initiative that looks at modifications. I don't think before everyone's always been saying repeal. What we heard in TBD is that people don't like the way they affect each other.
We're talking about things like Tabor, Amendment 23, the Gallagher
Amendment.
Those
are the three. Those are the trinity that people refer to relentlessly. And one possibility that I think we're going to look at is how could you change those three things, not eliminate them, but change them in such a way that they had a more harmonizing effect on the state.
Could we see that this coming session?
I don't know if we can go that fast, but there's a possibility.
To wrap up, this month, Esquire magazine named you one of its Americans of the Year. What do you think of their choice?
I think it must have been a short number of people this year to be considered. I certainly think the people that should be celebrated are the firefighters that were out fighting the Waldo Canyon fire, the High Park fire, all the couple dozen fires we had this summer, the police officers that were running the wounded from the movie theater to the hospitals. And that's really who this is. I am receiving this kind of recognition really for them.
Governor, thank you so much.
Oh, you bet.
Governor John Hickenlooper is a Democrat, and he speaks with us regularly at the state capitol.